What does Issues Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8384. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384.
Well, we have all sorts of ways of staying in touch with our listeners here at Issues Etc. One of the most important is our Issues Etc. comment line. It's a phone line we leave open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, just for you. For you to call in with questions, comments, suggestions, criticism, whatever kind of a comment you want to make. You want to disagree with something we said? You want to question something we said? You want to correct something that you think where we made a mistake? That's what the Issues Etc. comment line is for. The number 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. It's the Issues Etc. comment line. And if you call it, we can almost guarantee that you'll get a response right here on the air. That's why we set aside time to play comments from the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Let's continue the subject of the killing of George Tiller with a comment from this listener.
Hi. I was commenting about Dr. John Warwick Montgomery's discussion when it came to the defense of the unborn. And I had a question. Not that I think that I've outwitted Dr. Montgomery. He's a far wiser man than I. But it seems the logic falls short a bit when he says that Romans 13, we are doing harm to that when we, when Dr. The man killed Dr. Tiller. And I don't know if I justify that this man should be killed by any means, but I'm struggling with the fifth commandment and the sin of omission. If one were to see a man lining up 10 young children on the street and start slaughtering them, where is the moral logic in not stopping the man and letting him go and say, well, we're only going to try and fix this by trying to change the government at that moment? Yeah, we maybe have retribution of the pastors being shot and churches being burnt down, where is it that we are defending these young people in that site? It's a hard logic, and I really would like to know and find out how we could answer the sin of omission in when it comes to regards to the fifth commandment. And I'd like to be able to reconcile that myself. Anyway, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's a good question, one that's often asked. What Dr. Montgomery had said is that we do violence to Romans 13, where it is quite clearly taught that God has given us an agency for the punishing of evil and for the reward of good, and that is called civil government, or as Paul would call it, the ordained authorities. So the general principle there is against vigilantism, that is taking the law into your own hands, which is not really taking the law into your own hands. Taking the law into your own hands might be someone rapes your daughter, he gets away with it, you decide to go and exact your punishment, and you would exact whatever punishment there should be meted out against that kind of crime. You would be taking the law as it exists into your own hands. But what happened with George Tiller is a step beyond vigilantism. What happened with the murder of George Tiller is that He didn't take the law such as it is into his own hands. He became a law unto himself. Because what George Tiller was doing was, sad to say, and against all good legal and moral reasoning, perfectly legal. There's the problem. The problem is that what George Tiller was doing was considered, and is considered legally, just fine. So there was no law against what George Tiller was doing. That doesn't mean that there aren't means to stop him. Now, he uses the analogy, the commenter uses the analogy of finding someone who's lining up toddlers on the street corner to execute them. Would we sit there and try and change the political process at the moment? Well, of course we wouldn't. We would do everything we could. Would you take out a gun and shoot the guy in cold blood when he wasn't actively killing the toddlers? Now, the example is a bit absurd because it really only highlights what George Tiller was doing. That would be viewed by everyone as an obvious evil that should be stopped immediately, that should be illegal in each and every case. And for some reason, what George Tiller engaged in for a living and for decades was not. And again, it only points us back to where the real problem exists. But we are not permitted as Christians, on the basis of God's word, to take the law into our own hands or to set ourselves up as a law unto ourselves. And it leaves us in a terrible position. It leaves us in a position of knowing that there is great evil being done legally, and the only thing we can do about it, not only legally but morally, is try and change it through the political process such as we have it. But resorting to violence to end the violence of abortion is as wrong and, by the way, as illegal as anything George Tiller did. Mike in Rockford, Illinois, emails us. He says it's probably a dead horse by now, but the highlighting of the Fruit Loops and extremists by the media and commentators is something that is never talked about with the other groups. Now, that's not exactly true. I mean, crazies and Fruit Loops make for a great television. You can turn on television and watch a protest, and they will point the camera at the craziest person there because they're the most interesting one to watch, regardless of the group. But the emailer goes on, pick anything, but animal rights and environmental groups are a glaring example. Why is it acceptable to inflict property damage or bodily harm to save a chimpanzee or a redwood? Well, it isn't acceptable. It's actually illegal. If the media and society is not accepting of this type of violence or activism, they seem to accept that the goal is admirable, and this makes it easier for them to dismiss the violent acts as misguided, but not casting a negative light on the movement in general. Well, okay, I'll take your point, Mike. Let's try and not paint with the broad brush with regard to any of these groups. Are you willing to concede that the environmental movement or the animal rights movement might be populated by some reasonable people with a few crazies who give that group the reputation of being full of Fruit Loops and crazies? If we don't want that brush to be used to paint the pro-life movement, let's not use it on the other groups. And now if a group proves to be chock full of crazy people, then we'll call the thing what it is. Mark in St. Louis says, violence against abortionists is wrong. You shall not murder. Especially as Lutherans, we believe in the two kingdoms. Justice is the providence of secular government. The U.S. is still a democracy, although we seem to be doing our level best to destroy it. Vote. The U.S. is still a nation of laws. Unfortunately, natural law has been replaced with positive law, allowing free rein to man's perversity. A great point, by the way, Mark. Civil disobedience may be justified, but you have to be willing to pay the price without whining. That's right. The murder of George Tiller has no place to whine about his incarceration. And if you're going to be completely consistent, you should just plead guilty. Say, I did it. It wouldn't make what he did right, but at least he would be consistent. I did it. I feel it was justified. The law and the courts don't. I'll suffer the consequences. Hard cases make bad law. Bad con law makes hard cases. Bad law makes men worse. Great point, Mark. I cannot think, writes Mark, of a single instance in which assassination has produced anything good. Having said all of this, and allow me to emphasize that assassination is wrong, let us keep in mind what happens in an abortion. That's right. But again, two wrongs don't make a right. What your mom taught you when you were 4 years old generally proves to be true when it comes to moral reasoning. Does that mean we're satisfied with the moral reasoning, that it makes the whole world turn out to be roses and peach pie? No. It means, for Christians especially, sound moral reasoning makes the world a harder place to live in. Which is why, precisely why, the Bible doesn't permit us to cut corners when it comes to moral reasoning, or to give ourselves a loophole through which we can leap and no one else can. John in Tacoma, Washington, emails us. He says, "What really interests me about Dr. Tiller is that for 3 decades he performed these abortions while attending an LCMS church. What happened to church discipline? The church knew that what he was doing. Did they overlook this? St. Paul wrote about a man in the church who was sleeping with his father's wife. What must a person do to be disciplined in the church today? Murder, rape, or abortion doctors overlooked?" Now, I think the story on this one is still coming together. It is, in fact, true that Dr. Tiller was a member of a Lutheran church when he was shot dead, but not an LCMS, that is, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod Church. He and his family, by some accounts, had been a member of a Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod congregation in Wichita. And although I still have anyone to completely verify this for me, I've called a few journalists. I've had anyone completely verify this for me with facts from the church itself. He was apparently or reportedly excommunicated along with his family from that Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod congregation, as far as I can tell, somewhere around 1990. But again, no one's really giving us any details. I think it would be really helpful to have some details on that. But what you wrote there, John, about the Lutheran Church does apply very nicely to the Evangelical Lutheran Church congregation. I think it's Reformation Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas, where he was a member up until he was killed. A member in good standing, by the way. And it's not as though the congregation didn't know what he was doing. In fact, they received him into membership knowing full well that he had been excommunicated from a Missouri Synod congregation. That is almost unbelievable to me. When we come back, more from the comment line. You'll find a clearinghouse of Reformation resources at newreformationpress.com. T-shirts, music, outlines of important theological books, plus lectures by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. Check it out, newreformationpress.com. If you like Reformation theology, you'll love New Reformation Press. www.newreformationpress.com.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. LaDonna Patterson, Roger Keating, Bob Claywitter, Daniel Coffey, Pastor Keith Blome, Darren Walsh, Johanna Chandler, Dr. Peter Muller, Grace Taylor, and Rob Taylor. Thanks for your support.
Back by popular demand, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc., the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back. We're listening to some comments from our listeners. from the Issues Etc. comment line. That number again, by the way, 618-223-8384. It's always open for you, your questions, your comments, your criticism, anything you'd like to leave there. We'd love to hear it, and we play it for you on the air as time permits. In about 10 minutes here on Issues Etc., hour two of the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is going to join us. We're going to talk about cohabitation, living together, a nice segue into our conversation on the commandment, you shall not commit adultery, with Pastor George Borghardt of St. Mark Lutheran Church in Conroe, Texas. That's the second hour of the program. Well, here's a comment from a listener looking for some advice.
Hi, Todd. This is Jack in Iowa. I apologize for my comment being a little bit tardy, but I listened to you on my iPod. I always enjoy when you have Arthur Just on your show, and I have his book, Heaven on Earth, and I'm what I describe as being a liturgical Lutheran. And I agree with him when I go to some place where the pastor preaches law and gospel, and there's a historic liturgy, I do find peace. But what I'd like you to do, have a program on, is what do you do when you're not in Fort Wayne, Indiana, or Millstadt, Illinois, and there isn't any place to go? I used to live in Washington and Oregon. Most of the churches, LCMS churches out there, are pretty well have gone contemporary worship, open communion, things like that. I thought in moving to the Midwest that, you know, I would be more likely to find historic liturgy. The vast majority of the churches, LCMS churches in the area I live in, don't have historic liturgy. The closest Issues, et cetera, 300 church is about 50 miles away, which in the wintertime in Iowa really wouldn't be very practical. The church I belong to has just gotten a new pastor. He doesn't preach law and gospel. It's Joel Osteen and giving advice and being a psychiatrist. And I knew he was going to do this when he came from the church that he came from, because that's the way they do it. But already he's chipping away at the early service where we have historic liturgy. You know, not all three lessons, just two. Don't sing all the stanzas of the hymns. There seems to be some sort of rule in contemporary worship. You got to get that service done in an hour. So on Sundays when he had the Lord's Supper, he's going faster through the words of institution than the guy at the end of commercials that has to put in all the buts and ands to cover the organization. So what I want to know is, what is my wife and I supposed to do? I mean, you know, we're not in Fort Wayne, we're not in Millstadt. You know, what are we supposed to do? I mean, I want to honor the third commandment, but no liturgy, no long gospel sermon. Do I just hold my nose and come the Sundays when they have the Lord's Supper?
Oh, man. I mean, this is a cry for help. And Jack, believe me, and everyone listening to me who does enjoy Sunday by Sunday sound law and gospel preaching, a Christ-centered, cross-focused service, a pastor who will conduct the historic Christian liturgy not only with reverence, but with a keen eye toward everyone understanding and knowing what is going on there, who is dedicated to giving the gifts of God, not rushing through the words of institution as though he's issuing some sort of legal disclaimer. If you attend a church like that, then stop complaining about the little stuff, all right? If your pastor's a little annoying or has bad breath, or if he's doesn't have all the people skills you need, so what? You could be Jack in Iowa. You could be Jack in Iowa without a pastor who's faithful enough to consider the Lord's Supper the great gift that it is. You could be Jack in Iowa who has very few choices when it comes to where he's going to go to church and where he really wants to experience that heaven on earth that is historic Christian worship. So if communion takes too long, stop complaining. Because God has preserved for you in your midst there, in your congregation, what so many congregations have abandoned. Do you hear it, church growth pastors? Do you hear this man saying, all I want is what the church has historically given sinners, and my pastor won't give it to me? All I want is to hear God's word of law and gospel, and my pastor won't preach it to me? All I want is for him to slow down when he speaks the very words of Jesus about his body and blood and the forgiveness of sins, and he won't. Do you hear that, church growth pastors? This is what you're doing to the church. This is what you're doing. You think you're improving it, you're destroying it. You think that you're making it more relevant. You are robbing sinners like me, sinners like Jack there in Iowa, of the very things that they desire most in this world. You're not reaching the lost. You're losing the reached. That's what Mike Horton says about the church growth movement. They're not reaching the lost. They're losing the reached. And you are raising up a generation, some of them Christian, some of them quasi-Christian, of people who will not know 10 years from now what you've taken away, who will not remember 20 years from now what you robbed the congregation of, and a generation of Christians who will not know what they're missing. And I'm not talking about style and reverence and robes and incense and candles. I'm talking about the gospel. I'm talking about the center upon the cross of Jesus Christ. That's what you're doing to the church, church growth pastors. You may well be filling congregations, pews or chairs or theater-style chairs or whatever they may be. You may be filling your congregation with people who 30 years from now may not even be Christian because you've robbed them of the central message of Christianity. You've advised them on how to be nice people. They'll be nice people 30 years from now. They'll be very nice people and busy, busy, busy in your congregation, but they may not be Christian. Without the gospel, no one, not me, not anyone, can remain Christian. It's the only thing keeping us Christian. Jack, find the very best church you can, and if you're able at any time in the future, remember how important this is, move to find one. It doesn't have to be Fort Wayne or Millstadt. There are a lot of places where faithful pastors are still doing what God has called them to do, and I'm very sad for you and sorry for you. Indeed, I am, that the pastors around you are hirelings. Here's another comment from a listener about our recent interview with the president of the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod.
Yes, I would like to state that I think it was very appropriate to have the president of the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod as a guest to interview on issues, etc., even though I'm not a member of that particular church body. I think it's very good to bring that church body and its representative, the president, into conversation on a forum such as issues, etc. It's reminiscent of what in the days of Dr. Walter, that there were conferences held on among Lutherans on topics around the country. I think that's important to keep that going, and that hopefully this could continue in the future with the other smaller Lutheran church body representative spokesmen, pastors or officers on there to give a discussion about their confessional point of view and their stand. I think that's a very good thing to do, because no one else is going to do it for Lutheranism in America other than issues, etc. And I think that's a very good thing to keep up. I feel that it has been a suggestion I made earlier, and if that was acted upon, thank you very much. It's a very good move to do, and I think important to bring in as a forum a focus on the various Lutherans and their positions. That was a good move. Thank you very much.
Well, and thank you for the comment, for the compliment, too. I think we definitely will have Mark Schrader back on the show, because he was able to explain in very clear terms. You know, the strongest thing about that interview, besides the give and the take, the strongest thing about the interview is he was able to explain what it means to be Lutheran, something that you don't get from a lot of Lutheran leaders nowadays. They're not able to explain what it means to be Lutheran. They got a laundry list of doctrines that they affirm, but they can't tell you what it really means to be a Lutheran themselves. Well, with the one-year anniversary of Issues Etc. coming up on June the 30th, we got a question to ask, and we want your answer to it. We really, really do. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? In order to answer that question, all you got to do is call the comment line we've been listening to in this last half hour, 618-223-8384. Just call and say, this is what Issues Etc. means to me. Give us your name so we know and where you're listening. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384. 618-223-8384. You can call in the middle of the night. You can call first thing in the morning. You can call in the middle of the day because it's always there. We always answer, and your comment is always taken down. 618-223-8384. We especially want your answer to the question. Between now and June 30th, what does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384. Hour two of Issues Etc. is next. We'll start with Jennifer Roback Morse talking about cohabitation.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.